Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. This is not the voice of your cultural crusader. It's of one of his producers, rockstar Greg Tomlin. Thank you so much for joining us this Christmas Eve. We're playing some history shows for you today, all available at MedvedHistoryStore.com. This hour, we're going to be listening to the Battle of Princeton. Here's Michael.
This is something the Americans had never seen before. The first time the British had run away from Americans. And suddenly a huge whoop went up the entire American army, echoed by General Washington, who couldn't restrain himself. He rode again to the front of his men, shouting out, "It's a fine fox chase, boys! Come on!" And they followed the tall figure on a white horse. What did Washington mean, "It's a fine fox chase"? One of the most wounding moments of his life had been at the Battle of Long Island, where when his men ran away, Washington cursing and unable to assemble them, General Howe had ordered his buglers to play a fox chase. Not a military bugle call, just the fox chase theme, as if it was just sport to hunt these Americans who ran away. Now the tables turned, George Washington saying, "It is a fine fox chase, boys," joyously, completely unrestrained in the moment of victory. It was the first time in his entire military career. Remember, he had fought in the French and Indian War 2 decades earlier. But it's the first time in his whole military career that this man, George Washington, had seen an enemy in full flight across an open field. He couldn't resist the chase. He left to other generals the job of taking the garrison in the town. Meanwhile, he led the rest of his men chasing the British through woods, over creeks, relentlessly. People who saw this amazing day, of course, never forgot it. There was a young naval officer from Pennsylvania who had been granted leave to serve as a volunteer with the New Jersey militia. He left the sea. He was there on the battlefield at Princeton. And he wrote to his wife the day after the battle, "Oh, my Susan, it was a glorious day. And I would not have been absent from it for all the money I ever expect to be worth. General Washington's greatness was far beyond my description. I shall never forget what I felt at Princeton on his account when I saw him brave all the dangers of the field and his important life hanging, as it were, by a single hair, with 1,000 deaths flying around him. Believe me, I thought not of myself." Meanwhile, with the British in complete collapse and running away, there is still the British garrison back at Nassau Hall. Remember, that is the big building at the College of Princeton. The garrison was outside, but they decided to go inside this stone building. They knocked out all the glass windows of the American college, and they prepared to defend themselves against the advancing Americans, who are now marching up into the town to finish the day's job. The British had plenty of room. Remember, this is the largest building in all of the colonies. They are very well positioned because it's a tall building. They have guns pointing out of every window. So it's not such an easy job. Except there was a pretty good artillery officer who brought his guns up and was preparing to take care of this matter. His name? Joseph Mulder, the real hero of the Battle of Princeton, the stubborn wharf rat who had changed everything. And he was assisted by another artillery captain, bright young man, but from a dubious background. No one could forget that this other artillery captain was a bastard. He was illegitimate, and he was greatly humiliated by that status because he had pretensions of being a gentleman. But this other teenage captain was named Alexander Hamilton. Later had some importance in American history. Captain Hamilton and Captain Mulder moved their artillery into firing position. out of range of the rifles pointing at them from every window of Nassau Hall. And all of a sudden, Captain Hamilton gave the order to fire. The first round of shot bounced off the stone walls of Nassau Hall. You, by the way, can see this today. If you go to Princeton campus, you can see Nassau Hall. It's still there. Princeton, by the way, the whole battlefield is the campus. That's where Princeton University is now. And it's fascinating to walk around to realize that a battle was fought there. Crucial battle. Some of the Americans, including a Captain Wilkinson, were almost killed by the shot bouncing off Nassau Hall. Joseph Mulder then said, "Let me take care of this." He readjusted the angle of his guns, and they fired a second volley. For those of you who don't really believe that there's some kind of higher power involved here, well, first of all, there's the fact that the weather turned suddenly wet to mess up the road so Cornwallis couldn't bag Washington in time, and then the weather froze so that the mud was frozen so Washington could make it to Princeton. And then there's this. The second round at Nassau Hall, fired by Captain Mulder and Captain Hamilton, pierces the building. It enters the largest room in the building, which is the prayer hall. And then does what? It embeds itself directly in a picture of King George II. There was a large picture of King George II. The cannonball literally took his head off his body. The portrait remained there, but the cannonball went directly into his head. Now, the British were not fools. They saw this. They said, wait a minute, what are the odds against a cannonball going through a wall and then landing right smack dab in the king's face? Suddenly, Captains Hamilton and Mulder saw a white flag coming out of a third-story window in Nassau Hall, and the British marched out. Suddenly, these Americans took 194 prisoners, proud British regulars, marching out of Nassau Hall. They were described by one of the people who was present as a haughty, crabbed set of men, as they fully exhibited on their march to the country. This is that same sergeant, Sergeant R., who we talked about before, whose experience we've shared. He says, "In this battle, my pack, which was made fast by leather strings, was shot from my back, and with it went what little clothing I had. It was, however, soon replaced by one which belonged to a British officer and was well furnished. It was not mine for long, for it was stolen shortly thereafterwards. Immediately after the battle, an officer, observing blood on my clothes, said, 'Sergeant, you are wounded.' I replied, 'No.' But on examination, I found the end of my forefinger gone and bleeding profusely. When and how it happened, I never knew. I found also bullet holes in the skirts of my coat, but excepting the slight wound of my finger, I was not injured. The army retreated then to the Plaquemine Mountains. The weather was extremely cold, and we suffered greatly from its severity. The inhabitants manifested very different feelings towards us from those exhibited a few weeks before, and were now ready to take up arms against the British. He had lost his finger, but the Americans had won the battle, and this victory changed everything. Even with Cornwallis and his 8,000 men bearing down on Washington and about to surprise Washington in the town of Princeton." We'll be right back.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton. For more history shows, go to MedvedHistoryStore.com.
This is Michael Medved at MichaelMedved.com for Town Hall. Exit polls from the 2020 election show signs of a stronger Republican Party building a broader base. The Trump campaign focused on winning Black, Latino, and Asian votes and, to a surprising extent, succeeded. President Trump's percentage of Black voters rose by 50% compared to 2016, and among Latino males, he scored a competitive 36%. The GOP also saw a surge in Jewish support from 24% to 31%. A rise that played a role in Trump's Florida victory. In another area, Republicans still have work to do. Self-described moderate voters, 40% of the overall electorate, picked Biden over Trump by nearly 2-1. Yes, conservatives are more numerous than liberals, so we can win without outright majorities among the moderates. But Republicans win best as a right-center coalition, and moderate shouldn't be treated as a dirty word. I'm Michael Medved.
Introducing the all-new My Slippers from MyPillow. 2 years in development. Designed to wear indoor, outdoor, all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue. And made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, you can get 50% off the new My Slippers. They're super comfortable, and you'll like them so much you'll want to get pairs of them for the entire family. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code MEDVED. That's promo code MEDVED, M-E-D-V-E-D. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, like the Giza Dream bed sheets, the mattress topper, and towel sets. Call right now 1-800-320-6280. That's 1-800-320-6280, and use promo code MEDVED. Or go to the web at MyPillow.com. The all-new My Slippers from MyPillow.
Small investors shamed Wall Street by running the price of certain stocks way up to the detriment of big hedge funds, social media, and trading platforms, then kept investors from buying stock. A financial war is being waged in America. With all this volatility, now's an even better time to protect your net worth and own precious metals as part of your portfolio. Nick Rovich, who's the owner of Amfed Coin and Bullion, has always been fair and honest with my precious metals holdings, and now, more than ever, it's a good time to own tangible assets like gold, silver, and platinum. Amfed can show you smart choices, which have been proven winners time and time again. Call Nick and his team at Amfed today, 800-221-7694. That's 800-221-7694, or visit AmericanFederal.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
And welcome back. We're covering the Battle of Princeton and the winter of 1776-1777. The Battle of Princeton, not George Washington encountering General Howe's main army. That would be ridiculous. I mean, there was no way. Washington with only 1,400 regulars and, another perhaps 3,000 militia who didn't know what they were doing. Many of them had just run away in the middle of the night before. He wasn't ready to take on Howe's main force, but ingeniously, Washington had slipped aside, slipped around Cornwallis in the town of Trenton, deceiving Cornwallis with his rather ingenious use of bonfires and also of having people dig all night to completely mislead the British. This, by the way, was fairly typical of American inventiveness. There's another rather obscure, but I think totally remarkable example of it that involved General Israel Putnam, Old Putt, and it also involves the town of Princeton. A few days after the battle, when the Americans were left just a small detachment there in Princeton, Putnam had been ordered by Washington, as had all of his Washington's subordinates, to, quote, give out your strength to be twice what it actually is. That's what Washington wrote to General Putnam on January 5th. Now, this became a very difficult challenge because one of the wounded from the Battle of Princeton was a British captain who we know as Captain McPherson. He's really recorded in history only as Captain McPherson. We don't know much more about him. He had been shot through the lungs. He had received every medical attention, but his recovery was in doubt. And pathetically, the captain asked that a fellow officer from the British side be allowed to visit him and help make out his will. Well, at the time, General Israel Putnam was trying to hold his encampment at Princeton with a less than overwhelming force. He had 50 men with him. The remainder were out in detachments or were with George Washington heading toward the mountains. He absolutely did not want to bring a British officer into camp to make out the will for this dying officer and have the guy go back to Cornwallis and say, hey, you know, Princeton? Putnam is there. He's got 50 guys. It's pathetic. Let's mop him up. So here's what happened. Putnam dispatched a flag of truce to Brunswick with the captain's request, Captain McPherson's request, that another officer come so he could make out his will. But he gave strict orders to the courier not to return back to the town of Princeton with the other officer until after dark. In the evening, what Putnam ordered is that candles should be placed in every window of the college and in every window of every house, though most of them were empty, in the entire town. They assembled a whole bunch of candles. When all of a sudden the British officer came into town, he was astonished. I mean, this was lit up like the proverbial Christmas tree. Throughout the night, the 50 men, sometimes all together and sometimes in small detachments, were marched from different quarters past the one house where McPherson lay. Marched in all different directions, the same 50 guys. They were kept up all night. This created the impression of a multitude. And upon his return to the British lines, McPherson's friend told Cornwallis, when he was asked, how strong are the rebels at Princeton? He said, at least several thousand, sir. There were 50 guys there. This is what we call American ingenuity at its finest. And this certainly a huge role in winning this Battle of Princeton. Meanwhile, General Howe had a whole lot of explaining to do. He had to write back to the British about what had happened. He had to write back to his bosses, including Lord George Germain, who was the British Secretary of State responsible for administering this campaign. What is going on here? How could a motley crew of unorganized rebels now win the second victory within 10 days against the cream of His Majesty's Army? Well, Howe, rather than explaining it, lied. Howe listed the British losses of killed and wounded at 276. Washington estimated the enemy's losses at 600. Now, that figure included the 300 prisoners that Washington had taken. Howe's figure did not include the prisoners who had been embarrassingly seized. One indisputable fact did remain, and Howe had a tough time explaining it back at home. The 4th Brigade, an elite brigade, had been totally annihilated. And meanwhile, with the losses to the British, the total American losses for the day, 30 soldiers, 30 non-commissioned enlisted men, and 14 officers. The tragedy for the Americans was the loss of General Hugh Mercer. By the way, one of the most moving things you can ever see. As I mentioned before, that Mercer had this deaf-mute son, who later became fairly well known as a painter. He studied with Charles Wilson Peale in Philadelphia. This was at an era when anyone who was so severely handicapped, who couldn't hear, who achieved anything, was considered remarkable. His most famous painting is a painting of the death of the father he adored on the battlefield at Princeton, bayoneted by British infantrymen who thought he was George Washington. You can see that painting. It's at the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Art. It's quite remarkable, and the circumstances of this poor boy painting his own father's heroic death, deeply, deeply touching to look at. There was all kinds of aftermath of the battle, and everyone responded to the aftermath in a different way. What I want to do now is go back to this unpublished account, not published in books, only in magazines and records, of Sergeant Joseph White, the artillery sergeant and champion speller who survived the Battle of Princeton. Here's his account, first of all, of the battle, and then the aftermath of the battle is fascinating for Sergeant White. His account of the battle, he says, "A little before we got in sight of the enemy, our whole army halted. The captain sent me a sergeant with a bucket full of powder and rum. Every man must drink a half gill. He came to me to know if I had drank any. I told him no. Drink some, said he. I have, so I took a little. We marched on a short distance. We see them all formed in a line and ready to receive us. We marched forward, so did they. I ordered the limbers off, and to man the drag ropes. They were to the north of us. The sun shone upon them, and their arms glistened very bright. It seemed to strike an awe upon us." After the battle was over, writes Sergeant White, "I went into a room in the college, into Nassau Hall, which was the main room of Princeton College. They had just taken out the 194 haughty, crabbed British officers and men who had surrendered. And the college was empty. They had knocked out all the glass in the windows, remember? But Sergeant White reports, "After the battle was over, I went into a room in the college and locked myself in." Why did he lock himself in a room in the college? Well, you'll find out in a moment. Because Sergeant White writes, "I saw a plate of tote," I think he means toast, "a teapot, and everything just handy for breakfast. I sat down and helped myself well. I was very hungry, marching all night and fighting in the morning. I felt highly refreshed. After I was done, I looked around the room and saw an officer's coat. I went to it and found it a new one. The paper never taken off the buttons. Was plated or solid silver, I could not determine which, lined with white satin. There was a silk shirt, an elegant one, and a pair of silk shoes, and a small gilt Bible, all of which I took." Of course.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
You've heard that supply lines are down or moving slow. And that most everything costs more these days. But good news. High-quality Sunny Bay products are in stock and ready to ship now because they're made in the USA. Like our extra-long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs, are microwavable, and come in a variety of colors and patterns. What a great gift! An extra-long neck heating pad from Sunny Bay. Also available in lavender scented. Buy now in time for the holidays and avoid any shipping delays. Available on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. They're great for men or women, are reusable and easy to clean. So this year, give the gift of pain relief, an extra long neck wrap from Sunny Bay. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Order now when our stock is high and shipping is fast. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Travel headaches continuing across the country as flights are continuing to be delayed as COVID cases surge. FlightAware reporting more than 2,500 flights were canceled on Monday. This comes after more than 6,000 were canceled globally on Christmas Eve, Christmas, and the day after. The TSA saying they screened millions of passengers over the holiday weekend, the busiest time of year for air travel. This traveler at LaGuardia Airport in Queens, New York, tells Fox News she's no fan of being stranded at an airport.
It's frustrating because, you know, it's kind of scary and, you know, getting stranded at an airport.
President Biden back in Delaware after spending some time at the White House holding a conference call with governors. Biden saying more at-home tests are on the way. This is USA Radio News.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
Orders came for all the men to throw away their dirty old blankets, reports Sergeant White, and take new ones. The barrels of flour were great indeed. After filling all the wagons, they knocked the heads out of the remainder and strewed it around the ground. Washington was getting ready, by the way, to leave the town of Princeton. Cornwallis was literally just a half hour away. And about to come crashing into the town, he still could have captured Washington's army. They had beaten the British, they had taken the stores, they had taken the barrels, they would take the barrels of flour that they could. Meanwhile, they didn't want to leave others for the British, so they strewed it all around the ground. But as they were getting ready to leave, Sergeant White reports, the women came and looked at it, the women of the town, but they seemed afraid to meddle with it. I, being nigh, told the women to scalp it up by aprons full before the enemy come. I had rolled a barrel to the ammunition wagon and told the captain that I was only going to that house, pointing to it. Should be back in just a few minutes. Why was he going to a house? He had this idea. I engaged a woman to bake me some cakes. Here was his idea. He basically would come bring a bunch of flour and say to the woman, here, you can keep some of the flour, bake a bunch of cakes. I want some cakes. You can keep the rest yourself. Let's do a deal. Meanwhile, he went to the woman in the house. And he says, I asked the woman if she had any daughters. What do you want to know that for? Said she. I told her, do not worry. I was steady as a pious old deacon. I'm sure she was very reassured. Here is a ragged, dirty, sweaty, filthy American sergeant with a whole bunch of stolen stuff that he just took out of Princeton College. And he says, do you have any daughters? Wouldn't you be worried? Well, sure she was. He said, I told her that I was as steady as a pious old deacon, he writes. How many daughters have you? She replied, two. Well, I have got presents for both, said I. When I come again, we'll bring them. I went to see how the cakes come on and carried my presents. Here, mother, said I, are the presents. Call your daughters. She went to the stairs and called Sally. Come down. But she come part of the way and stopped. I went to the bottom of the stairs and said, Sally, come down. Here is a present for you. She came. Here, try this petticoat on, and if it fits, you keep it. Tell your sister to come. I've got something for her. She came. I told her to take the shoes and try them on. If they fitted her, to keep them. He had given her, in other words, the shoes that he took from the British officer and the silk shirt that he had taken from the British officer, passing it off as a petticoat. Meanwhile, he writes, I went to the company and stayed some time. Orders came to get ready to form the line and march in half an hour. I ran to see if the cakes were done. The woman said the oven was heating. I could have some in an hour's time. They didn't have an hour's time. Sergeant White never got his cakes, but he did get the satisfaction of giving Sally some presents. Meanwhile, he had that coat, the new coat, with the gold buttons on it or the silver buttons. And what did Sergeant White do with it? He reports, that coat I sold to an officer of a rifle regiment. The uniform answered to his all but the buttons. It belonged to the 40th Regiment, faced with White. I sold it for $18. Meanwhile, they had to leave town. The last Americans to leave the town of Princeton, heading north, not knowing again where they're going. The last Americans to leave the town could hear the advance guard of Cornwallis coming into the town. And Cornwallis was not in a good mood, having just heard what was happening. Someone who saw Cornwallis entering the town described him as entering the town sweating and puffing and going forward furious. But the old fox gave him a slip again. Cornwallis arrived in, quote, a most infernal sweat, running, puffing, and blowing and swearing at being so outwitted. Meanwhile, Washington headed north with the idea of claiming 70,000 pounds sterling in the town of Brunswick. There was only one problem. There was somebody else in the town of Brunswick, too. The American prisoner, General Charles Lee, remember him? Insubordinate, impossible, haughty, ridiculous. One of the great breaks that had been caught by the Continental Army was that Charles Lee had been taken prisoner about 3 weeks before. Unfortunately, there was no way that Washington could get the gold and silver in Brunswick without picking up Charles Lee as well. Question is it worth it? We'll be right back. On the march once more, the second smashing victory in less than 10 days. And yet, the Army, Washington's cold, little, but deeply encouraged Army, wouldn't dare stand and fight against Cornwallis, not in Princeton, not anywhere else. They bid farewell to the town. By the way, as they left the town, the sort of pleasant scenes that are described with Sergeant Joseph White presenting gifts to this unidentified young lady, Sally, trying to make a deal to get his cakes. He never did get his cakes baked because they had to leave too quickly. The British came in and sacked the town, attacked some of the women. Cornwallis and his men, so angry at having missed Washington. Washington had left just a half hour ahead of Cornwallis. And they're marching along the road again. What's the intention? The intention was to strike at Brunswick, a very lightly guarded British garrison. The key thing there was not only taking over armaments, cannon, guns, but the 70,000 pounds of money that the Army absolutely, desperately, desperately needed. The problem is, they have fought all day at Princeton. It's getting dark. And just 3 miles northeast of Princeton, the Army crossed Millstone Creek and arrived at a tiny town, really just a couple of buildings. It's called Kingston. And there was a fork in the road right there. The main highway went straight on to Brunswick, just 18 miles away. A tantalizing 18 miles. If they marched all night again, they'd be there by dawn. They had marched all night the night before to get to Princeton. They had marched all night to attack Trenton 10 days before. Now, just 18 miles more to Brunswick. But Washington paused at the fork in the road because there was a left-hand highway, a smaller road, that followed the winding course of a little river downstream toward a Somerset courthouse, which was basically just a courthouse and a few buildings near it. And here, at this intersection, Washington called a council of war. He called his staff up, his officers up. And Major Wilkinson remembered that the commander-in-chief sat on his horse with several other general officers. They halted for quite a while, perhaps an hour, looking wistfully in the direction of Brunswick, with everyone speculating on what they could do if they only had some fresh troops. The difficulty is that the men were absolutely exhausted. They had marched all night the night before. They had fought all day at Princeton. They simply could not be asked to do anything more after what they had been through. Henry Knox, bemoaning the fact that the troops had been without rest, rum, or provisions for two nights and days, Joseph White hadn't even gotten his cakes, thought that if they had 1,000 additional soldiers, they could have struck one of the most brilliant strokes in all history. The question here was, do you risk everything and go on to Brunswick for this money, for yet another triumph? The reason it's a risk? Well, you arrive in Brunswick, you're exhausted, and Cornwallis can fall down upon you and simply take the army prisoner. Here's what Washington wrote to Congress. My original plan, when I set out from Trenton, was to have pushed into Princeton and then on to Brunswick. But the harassed state of our own troops, many of them having had no rest for two nights and a day, and the danger of losing the advantage we had gained by aiming it too much, induced me, by the advice of my officers, to relinquish in the attempt, but in my judgment, 600 or 800 fresh troops upon a forced march would have destroyed all their stores and magazines, taken, as we have since learnt, their military chest containing 70,000 pounds, and put an end to the war. If Washington had captured Brunswick, could it have put an end to the war as he believed? Possibly. But it could have gone the other way as well, because there really was no telling as to whether Washington himself would have been captured and his army captured by Cornwallis coming in.
I've had several knee injuries on my left knee, and so over time, stiffness set in with a great deal of pain. So I went ahead and ordered the starter packet, and after about 2 weeks, I started noticing results. And after they were gone and I reordered, let's say 6 weeks in, my pain was virtually gone. But the big bonus was that the stiffness was also virtually gone. And so, therefore, my problem with my left hip also went away. I'm very happy I decided to try it and will continue to use it.
You can get a 3-week quick start for just $19.95. That's 95 cents a day. What a good investment. Nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. You can go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor. That's michaelmedved.com, banner for Relief Factor, or call 833, toll free, 654-PAIN, 833-654-PAIN. Okay, how crucial are faith and freedom really to America? Ronald Reagan called faith and freedom the twin beacons that brighten the American sky. What did Reagan mean? Well, you can find out at the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College, which has just launched a new course on the legacy of Ronald Reagan. This is very important because the course is posted online at the Institute's website, faithandfreedom.com. The course is led by Reagan biographer and expert Dr. Paul Kangor, frequent guest on my show. And the course includes Professor Kangor's one-on-one interviews with the likes of Bill Bennett, Ed Meese, Peter Robinson, Michael Reagan, and more. It's a remarkable offer that you will truly not find anywhere else, and it's free. Yeah, it's actually free. While you're there at faithandfreedom.com, also check out the many articles and lectures on topics from freedom of conscience to critical race theory, from Madison and Lincoln to Churchill and Reagan. You can find all of this and much more on the website at the Institute for Faith and Freedom, Faith and Freedom.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Extendovite really works. Here are some reviews from Amazon.com. John Hess, 5 out of 5 stars. Awesome. Probably my only review, but at age 40, I was getting bad heart throb and left arm pain, mainly before bed. I even stopped smoking and drinking sodas for a month, and that didn't work. After one day of taking Extendivite, it was gone and hasn't returned in 3 years. I've ordered Extendivite 13 times, so Amazon just said. Juliet Hordick. I've ordered this product before in liquid form. It is fantastic. My whole family's been on it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest-rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
Washington pushed his exhausted men onward past the little crossroads where he paused for this very fateful council of war, and pushed them on and on to the tiny village of Somerset Courthouse. When they came up to Somerset Courthouse, they were absolutely exhausted. Having been through a battle, some of these boys had been on their feet for 48 hours. They had fought two battles in the dead of winter, made a forced night march across 16 rugged miles, had been almost without food or drink. They were, as Washington knew, approaching the outer limits of human endurance. It was a real question how far they could travel. What happened is when they reached the courthouse, they simply collapsed. Some of them came inside the building. Some of them simply fell asleep in the cold, in the freezing cold outside. And then the next day, still trying to dodge Cornwallis, Washington moved on. He selected in advance as a place to move on the town of Morristown. Morristown was perfect for his purposes. It was in the mountains, the Watchung Mountains of New Jersey. And it was one of those places where there was a swamp that was impassable on one side of the town. On the other side of the town, you had to enter through a mountain pass, which was very easily defensible. You simply had to station guards there. It was a protected town. There were a number of farmhouses that were available, structures available as shelter for people. When they arrived in Morristown, the army was relieved. And here, at last, Washington was planning to make his winter quarters. You may remember that a while ago, General Howe, the British general back in New York City, had said that he had called off the campaign of 1776. The campaign was over. Washington didn't pay attention to that. The big problem here, the men had reenlisted for a month more, and many of them were indeed determined to go home. They just weren't about to stay. They had won the Battle of Trenton. They had now won the Battle of Princeton. Many of the people were determined to go home. But Washington knew that at his quarters at Morristown, with these two victories, the victory at Trenton and the victory at Princeton, everything had changed, and people would begin rallying to the American cause, and he could reassemble an army and begin to replace the people that he had lost. This was one of the key differences in the Revolution, is the British had a tremendously difficult time replacing any men that they lost, because you had to basically bring those men across an ocean. And that was expensive and it was difficult. There were 3 million Americans living in the various colonies, not including the slave population. And by the way, one of the things that everyone talks about is how many free Negroes and how many Negroes who left slavery getting their freedom in return for fighting in the Continental Army fought in this Continental Army. It was absolutely an integrated force that included a fairly large number. Some people even estimated as many as 20% of its number being people of color. Meanwhile, Sergeant Joseph White, our old friend, well, he's about to disappear to history. Because he writes in his diary, the term of my enlistment being out, this is in March, just 2 months after his experience at Princeton, his experience at Trenton, his heroic service, he had been in the Army since Bunker Hill. The term of my enlistment being out, General Knox addressed the artillery in a pathetic manner, begging us to stay 2 months longer. Most of our regiment did. The captain said to me, do persuade the men to stay 2 months until the new recruits learn how to handle the cannon. Have you put down your name? Said he. I said I had not made up my mind. However, I put my name down to stay until the 1st of March, 1777. If I had left it when my time was out, I should have escaped many dangers and sufferings I experienced that winter. When we were at Chatham, that's up in Morristown, was put into a small school for barracks, as many as 40 men, not room enough for us all to lay down. I told the captain that place would not do for us. He got a better place to sleep. Finally, the end of March came along, and he says, my time I had engaged for had expired. I told the captain the last day of February that I should set out for home the next morning. I wanted him to give me a discharge and a month's pay. Step here, said he, and take your pay. You are crazy to leave us now. Colonel Knox is made Brigadier General, and two regiments more are to be raised, and every sergeant will have a commission. Your name is the third in the list for one. You will be at least a captain. A lieutenant, perhaps, I think. Or a full captain, said he. I told him I should go home. I did not care about a commission. All our officers met that evening and gave me very flattering discharge. I left the army, and in about 2 weeks, marched home, safe and sound. We know nothing else about Sergeant Joseph White, by the way, who did leave the army, went home to his mother. He was 20 years old. And he had enlisted when he was 18. He's 20 now. He disappeared from history from that day in 1777 for another 41 years. And not until 1818 does he turn up in the pages of history again. Then, only 2 weeks after President Monroe signed a pension act for Revolutionary veterans, White materialized in the pension records. On March 31st, 1818, James Monroe, who had been wounded, remember, James Monroe was now president, he had been wounded at the Battle of Trenton, who was the same age as Sergeant White, Monroe promised a pension for any Revolutionary War veteran who had suffered hardship, who was poor. And on March 31st, 1818, Sergeant White appeared before a Massachusetts judge to file a declaration of eligibility. By May of the following year, then as now apparently, government didn't exactly move along at a breakneck speed. Sergeant White had been able to certify that he was a legitimate veteran, and he had established, as the act required, that he was in sufficiently, quote, reduced circumstances to deserve the $8 per month enlisted man pension. Officers got $20 a month. Here's the schedule he submitted of his personal property at the time. He owned, total, an old printing press worth $20, type worth another $10, and a cutting press valued at $1. The tools of his trade as a printer, apparently, at which he was a failure. His books and ballads came to $5, toys and etc. to $3, four spoons, $2. The whole pathetic total of what he owned in the world, $61.55. He was owed $18, but his debts were $11.50. The judge who forwarded this document to the War Department added his comment that a decrepit soldier, 63 years old, cannot do much at any labor. White got his pension, his $8 a week. He deserved it. Meanwhile, those who remained with George Washington at Morristown found a reasonably pleasant winter. And yet, they did not entirely give up the battle against the British. They continued a guerrilla-style campaign which had devastating impact, particularly considering the British psychology at the time. We will get to that and get to General Howe in New York and what he is up to, and the new British plan for yet another massive new offensive, three-pronged offensive, to end this brutal war once and for all.
Thanks for listening to this special presentation of the Michael Medved Show, The Battle of Princeton. For the rest of this program, go to medvedhistorystore.com and you can download it there. It's on offer on MP3 download or audio CD. We also hope you enjoyed the Battle of Trenton program that we kicked off today with. There's so many programs available at Medved History Store on the American Revolution, on the Vietnam War, World War II, also profiles of great Americans, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Ronald Reagan, Martin Luther King Jr., and a whole holiday section of the Medved History Store about Christmas. We're going to be playing that show tomorrow, the Thanksgiving holiday, Veterans Day, and so much more. Thank you for your continued support of this program in so many ways, by listening, by downloading the podcast, by being medheads. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for the secret history of the Christmas holiday in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com. Only rarely does a new film come along to remind movie lovers of Hollywood's golden age some 80 years ago. Greyhound, starring Tom Hanks, is that sort of old-fashioned thriller. Notably enriched by state-of-the-art special effects and riveting action sequences showing World War II's Battle of the Atlantic. Hanks, who also wrote the screenplay, portrays a destroyer captain given his first command, leading a crucial Anglo-American convoy across the ocean, but facing destruction by wolf packs of German submarines. Based on a 1955 novel by C.S. Forrester, who also wrote the beloved Horatio Hornblower series, this film gives loving attention to the hero's profound Christian faith. Hanks shows the overburdened commander at prayer on multiple occasions while portraying the emotional bonds between men of every background facing danger together. As with Saving Private Ryan, where Hanks also starred, or the great John Adams miniseries, which he produced, Greyhound enriches our culture with an inspiring story of American heroism. I'm Michael Medved.
Have you heard about vine-to-bar chocolate? It's the winemaker's chocolate, the world's first chocolate made with well-vined Chardonnay marc from the beautiful coastal vineyards of North America. Gently pressed grapes are harvested after juicing, dried and finely milled, and carefully blended into the finest dark chocolate. The Chardonnay marc contains highly beneficial grape nutrients, flavanols, and has a natural sweetness that flavors the luscious dark chocolate. Mouthwatering, flavorful, delectable dark chocolate goodness with Chardonnay sweetness and beneficial nutrients. And it's alcohol free too. It's Vine to Bar Chocolate. Order some today at vinetobar.com. That's VINETOBAR.com. Cold shipped to your door, it's Vine to Bar. Vine to Bar Chocolate. Visit us at vinetobar.com.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach, at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to teamgaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's teamgaday.com with Longevity. Teamgaday.com.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.